G'day friends, and welcome to another awesome edition of Happy Days. This is your pal Jesse on the mic, welcoming you back for another awesome episode. And a huge thank you to every single one of you that take the time to listen to the show. You're amazing. You all rock. Seriously, thank you so much. As I say, every now and then, there's plenty of good podcasts out there. And the fact that you've invested a bit of time to hang out with me means the world to me. So thank you so much. If you could take it one step further and hit that subscribe button, that would be legendary. Because as you know, Happy Days is a cool show where I talk to some really interesting people that have some incredible stories to tell about their lives, their childhoods, what inspires them, what keeps them motivated, that sort of thing. And I do this in the vain hope that we can inspire each other out there, yourself included, and motivate you to go out and find your happy path and do something great. So whatever platform you listen to podcasts on, hit the subscribe button for Happy Days and show your support. That'd be greatly appreciated. Go that one step further, leave a review as well, man. Leave a rating. It does help. That's what I'm led to believe anyway. Helps people find the show. As you know, there's millions of shows out there, so it'd be great to just, you know, be a little bit more out there in the mix. Now, this week's episode is a freaking cool one. I'm really excited about this one. I get to talk to one of my dearest friends. And you know what? I am so grateful. I really am. Before I introduce my guest, I am grateful on many levels to have friends for a start. And I know that sounds crazy because we all have friends, but I'm genuinely grateful for the friends that I have. The genuine friends out there, the people that, you know, genuinely care about my well-being and, you know, just take the time to be kind, right? And it's a beautiful thing. And prior to recording this episode, I, you know, had a wonderful conversation with my guitarist and longtime collaborator, Matt Shorter from Dark Cell. And, you know, we did a lot of soul searching and, you know, it was a beautiful conversation. And, you know, he's like a brother to me, man. I love the guy to death. And I'm so proud of him with everything he does with his Electric Witch clothing and everything else. But it was just great to just have a really stress-free conversation that was not revolving around business, and just be human. And it was so good. It was so enriching. And you know, we've had a stressful time for the last 2 years with everything that's going on in the world, but also, you know, obviously a functional band like Dark Cell, it's, you know, we just had a lot of stress, you know, working out what we were doing and everything. And, you know, we had this year, we've had no shortage of shows offered to us and tours and that. And this year we planned to bring back the Psycho Circus and all that. And it was all looking good, but I don't know. We just in our hearts just didn't feel like it was right, you know? And we were just really asking ourselves, who are we doing this for? You know, we as a band just could not do you guys justice by going out on stage and just delivering a very slap happy performance. That's, you know, for those of us that know Dark Cell well, you know that that's not the kind of show we put on. We give you 110% or nothing at all. And we just didn't want to turn into that band of just going out there and going through the motions. You know, there are many bands that do that more than enough today. So we just didn't want to be another statistic out there and just another band that just dies in the ass. So we made the decision to put Dark Cell's live machine on hiatus for the, you know, for the indefinite future. Not saying that it's done. It's just that we just need some time out from it. And Matt and me will continue recording, not straight away, just in due course again, you know, when the stars align, it'll happen. excuse me, just because, you know, we wanted to be fun. You know, the whole premise of this band, first and foremost, was to have fun. And, you know, when you reach that point where it's not fun, you do one of two things. You either end it or you take a break. And we just went, you know what? I think it's best if we just take a break for a bit. And when the time is right, we'll go back and find that vibe again. And that's what it's all about, creating that vibe and being true to yourself and having fun. Because if you're not, then you're really kidding yourself. So here, this leads me to this week's episode. I am talking to an amazing human being, Lindsay Schoolcraft. You know her as that one time she was playing keyboards and singing in a band called Cradle of Filth, but she's so much more than that. She is such a powerful human being. She just has a presence and an energy about her that just really appeals to me and to many of us out there. She has a wonderful support base of Patreon supporters, but also genuine human beings that follow what she does because she's an inspiring and motivating person through her musical journey and just her day-to-day philosophy. It's wonderful. She's very well spoken. I'm absolutely thrilled to have this chat with her, and it's a tremendous honor to have her part of the Happy Days universe. And we just have a really great conversation about her childhood, her musical journey, some guilty pleasures, her mum's wretched, disgusting green couch, her awesome cat. Yes, we talk a little bit about Cradle of Filth, but that's not the crux of this conversation. We talk about her evolution into becoming a producer herself. So it's quite a fascinating journey, and hopefully some really cool stuff there for all of you to learn. And we also talk about, she's recently blown up in the media with collaborating on the new Motionless in White single, which is very exciting. So we have a bit of a chat about that as well. And I hope that you all get something great from this. It's an inspiring conversation, and every episode that I have is an inspiring conversation with these people. So be sure to check out some of the other episodes on here. There's also my weekly Saturday show, Rad, which I do with my pal, Jake Reedy. It's well worth checking out. So, subscribe to the channel, and that way you can just, you know, stay in tune with everything that's happening, because it's all awesome, and you're awesome for tuning in. So, without further ado, check out this episode with Lindsay Schoolcraft, right here on the Happy Days Network, proudly brought to you by my very own Freak Productions. Go to freakproductions.com. That's FREEK.com. Because, boys and girls, in my world, it's just too weird to be a freak. Enjoy this episode, and keep it freaky. Lindsay.
Hello. How are you?
Good, mate. How you doing?
I'm okay. I'm surviving.
Yeah, good to hear, man. Good to hear. I'm sporting a very cool Barry Manilow voice this morning.
It's fantastic.
So, yeah, thanks, man. I'm sort of a cross between Barry Manilow and Tony Todd, so I'm feeling a little Candyman-ish this morning as well.
That's all right. I can dig it.
Yeah, cool, man. Cool. So, enough about me. How the heck are you? You doing good?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just at the end of a very long week. Mm-hmm. Very busy week.
Yeah.
So just, you know, gonna chat with you, and then I'm gonna reward myself with a giant vegan pizza and call it a day.
Oh, dude. That sounds perfect.
Yeah, perfect. It's what's needed.
Hell to the air. Well, thanks so much, Lindsay, for jumping on board and sharing your happy days with me, man. This is an absolute honor and a treat.
So, yeah. Same.
Yeah, man, this is cool. I mean, you're one of my very dear friends, and I'm really excited to just get a
deep dive into your little world of happiness and awesomeness.
Oh, cheers.
Yeah. So I thought we could do a little bit of time warp here if you're cool.
Totally and, down.
Right on, dude. So I was thinking I would love to know sort of where it all started for you, because you're quite the talented musician, as everyone knows and loves. I'd love
too
to know.
Kind.
No, but like I would love to know where it all started. The you know, growing up at home, you know, what was blaring out the stereos, you know, that sort of thing.
I honestly think it was just like a mix of the top of the pops from the 80s and the 90s.
Awesome.
Because those hold such a special place in my heart. Like anything that was big all the way up to the early 2000s, you know, by then I was in mm-hmm. high school.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like the 90s was a wonderful time, but I was born 86, and a lot of music from the 80s still filtered through the top 40 in the 90s, you know, yeah. Like it was like late night listening, you know, going around from after school activities, my parents driving me around in the car, they'd listen to top 40 and like, you know, 80s songs would show up. So like, that's a big part of it, but it was honestly Disney, the classic 90s Disney that was around then.
Awesome.
Huge influence on me to care about music and drama, theatrics, color, all that stuff. But my dad actually is a very talented singer and guitarist. He didn't pursue it, but he grew up with like the Eagles, the Beatles, Johnny Cash, Led Zeppelin. So a lot of that was going on at home. It was very strange. He always said people of his generation who were into rock, it was either Led Zeppelin or Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
There was no in between unless like you were super cool for some reason.
Yeah.
So my dad was a Led Zepp fan, so that's what we listened to.
I think that's a healthy combination right there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, and, but then you got my mom listening to like ABBA and Cher and the Bee Gees.
you gotta have a bit of balance, right?
Yeah, right.
Bit of yeah, light and shade. So that I'm guessing in the family car there'd be some various sing-alongs to some of these pop tunes, so I'm guessing a lot of that rubbed off on you very early on.
I think because my dad is a very one task at a time person, he didn't necessarily sing along and drive. I think he was too nervous to like crash the car.
Gotcha.
But my mom would hum along. She'd make up the words. She never knew the words. And it kind of bugged me as a you know, budding singer lyricist.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
No, you have to get the words right. Like, I was such an elitist at such a young age. No wonder I got into black metal. But
I can just picture that now.
Yeah. Yeah, sitting in the front seat and she'd be humming along, making up the words.
Yeah,
and she loved a good hook. But we'd just sing along together, but like all of her words would be wrong. And I'd be like, it's okay, mom, I forgive you. You know, you tried.
You get a pass this time, mom. That's cool. And
yeah.
And so am I right in saying it was a lot of dad being a guitar player and singer that rubbed off on you picking up an instrument and going, I wonder what this does.
Yeah, he showed me some stuff when I was like 7, 8 on guitar. And it was Beatles, Johnny Cash, Eagles, very simple chords. Like he simplified some of the songs for me because a lot of country chords are crazy, you know, more in the realm of jazz almost.
Yeah.
And it was cool, but I felt like I needed to identify with the music in order to want to do it. And there was piano lessons at a young age too, but it wasn't until high school and it's like, oh, like I identify with this, I want to play it, that it happened. But having a musical household and having a musician in the family definitely was like a big, you know, it was a big help because it's like, you know, then it's like, okay, I can go home and talk to a musician. And my dad helped me get my first bass guitar when I was 15. So
wow.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for that, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I can't imagine growing up in a non-musical household.
Yeah.
It would be weird.
Yeah, absolutely. That would have been so cool. So weird and so cool at the same time. But when you started learning all the instruments and stuff, did the art of songwriting sort of appeal to you straight away? Like, did you have this burning desire to want to start writing songs as soon as you started learning how to play the instruments?
Yeah, I mean, it was always there. I was big on, I was more of like a visual artist, like expressing myself as a kid.
Yeah.
Through like colors, drawings, like painting, whatever I could get my hands on. But I think it was around the age of like 7, 8, 9 where I started to kind of care about like poetry. Like poetry classes at school were really fun. And I really enjoyed it. It was more actually like storytelling. I think some of the best songwriters on the face of the planet are storytellers.
100%.
So I used to write short stories as a kid all the way to high school. And that was like my thing. That was my jam. But I think words are powerful and important. They have the power to enlighten and uplift and empower people, or just tear them down in two seconds, you know? So, storytelling was like a big thing, and poetry was fun. But I didn't like, I'm not a very rules oriented person. Like, I'm not like, oh, like haiku to the T, like that pissed me off. I'm like, no, but why can't I add two lines at the bottom? Like, why does it have to be like, I was a stubborn kid. So So, I mean, I didn't really care to, like, I really started getting notebooks and pens and telling stories and writing songs when I was in my first band in high school. That's when it like started, when I was 15.
That's so cool. So I'll ask you about that one in a sec, but I just wanted to know, when you talk about storytellers and that, was there a particular storyteller for you that sort of clicked straight away that appealed to your senses? Like, I mean, for myself, like, I'll give you an example. Like, when I was in high school, everyone's listening to all the trendy, cool new shit, but I found myself going backwards and listening to Jimi Hendrix and Elvis Presley, you know, and I just went, wow, this is cool. So I'm wondering if you had that. Yeah, exactly. So I'm wondering if you had something like that that rubbed off on you.
Like, I love story time before bed as a kid, and of course it's like Grimm's fairy tales, which a lot of Disney comes from. A lot of the Grimm's fairy tales are very dark. It's probably why I am who I am, but there were so many books. Like, now I look back and there were so many books that we read in school, and I think Bridge to Terabithia is the only one I can actually like remember. But there was so many books that we read in school, and just like to listen to the teacher read it to you and to just draw up the imagery in your mind was like, you didn't have to do anything but listen. And you know, you could see like the people who were more like, they weren't as creative, they're just like, oh, okay, that's cool. But then I'm sitting there and I'm like in awe seeing the movie unfold in my mind before me. That was like big, you know what I mean? So that was just kind of like, I guess that's kind of how I approach songwriting. I visualize it but hear it at the same time. So like, I can't remember all the books now. There was one about a bat. And I think that there was a modern adaptation, but they changed it to owls because they're like, nobody likes bats.
Yeah.
I still can't remember the name of it. It was like something wing.
Discrimination against bats.
I know. How dare you? Bats are beautiful.
I know.
I can't remember any of them now. It's just because I'm like really tired today. It'll be like 4 a.m. and I'll be like, I'll text you and be like, it was these.
I'll be waiting. So was horror, obviously horror is a big thing in your world as well. Like, were authors like Stephen King or Clive Barker on your radar by that point?
I was a Goosebumps kid. I was more X-Files and Goosebumps. Like, I'm more like sci-fi weird occultness.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like horror for me was just like, oh, cool, you threw an axe at a guy's head. Oh, no. But then when it's like this mystical alien creature fantasy stuff you can't explain, like ghosts and shit, I'm like, yes.
That's brilliant. I love that.
Yeah, dude.
Oh, that's so cool.
Best question ever. You win.
Thank you. Yes. I'll take that with pride. So, Back to high school. So you join your first band. I'm all kinds of curious to hear about this. So what, because we all have a first band story, but I'd love to know your right. first band story. So,
oh, you're getting the dirt that like no one else
ever
got, because it's just like bringing back so many memories going through the timeline.
Yeah, man.
I actually did start a band before my first like all girl punk band, and it was more kind yeah. of like edgy. It was like alternative rock, but yeah. it fell apart because like the people, like, you know, everyone likes the idea of being in a band, and then we get there and they just want to hang out. Like, nobody wanted to do any work. You know, you're teenagers, right. you're unfocused. Why would you want to do any work outside of all the homework you have at high school? So they would just like hang out, and I'd be the only person to like bring out my lyrics and my bass guitar and talk about doing something and collaborating. And like, they were just not there for it. So we just hang out and talk about boys and do each other's hair. And I was like, guys, what the hell? Like,
yeah,
I thought we were going to do a band. And one of the girls, I'll never forget this. You know, I wasn't a very developed singer at the time. I was trying, but she's like, yeah, no, you're only good for backup vocals. Like, you're not a lead singer.
Oh,
and wow. I was like, I'm going to prove you so goddamn wrong. Like, you have no idea. Like, I'm one of those people, when people tell me I can't be something I want to be, I will go hell and high water, you know, make yeah. it happen. So that one didn't happen. But then actually I needed to find people outside of my school. When I was in high school, I actually had to reach outside of the confines. Is that the word I'm looking for? Of my high school. Yeah. I found other people at other schools who were actually serious. And that's like how that first band formed. And it was more in the realm of like pop punk, riot girl punk. Like, it was edgy and catchy, and we were terrible, but like no one's first band is good.
But you're in the moment, you're having fun, just pouring your heart out and just having a good time, right?
No one talks about this, but that first band breakup is like your first boyfriend breakup or a girlfriend breakup.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
It is.
Like you put everything into it and you thought it was going to be it. It was great. Like, we got onto Warped Tour and we got some sponsorships and we went hard for 6 years, you know?
Wow.
But it was fun. But in that time, it was like this little window that I really wanted to do punk. And then about 2 years later, I was like, you know what? Actually, I really want to listen to Slipknot and Korn and Evanescence and Linkin Park more. Like, Linkin Park was always there because they were so big.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like, you know, I was like, well, why can't, like, we don't have to be narrow down one path. Why can't we have other influences? Why can't we just enjoy music? And at this time, like you mentioned, Jimi Hendrix and Elvis, even for me, it was like Queen and Led Zepp. Like, I started going back to those at that age. And I'm like, I think like there shouldn't be any limit to what one person would do. And like, let's say that first project blew up, I feel like that band would have changed entirely over those 20 years. And that's why bands do change.
They do.
You know, after 20 years, I get it. So yeah, it was strange. It was an interesting time during the early, the rise of new metal.
I dig that. It was a very interesting time. So with that, like, that was, thank you so much for sharing that. That was cool. With, you mentioned Linkin Park and Slipknot and Korn, tick, 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 love all those bands. But I feel like we're building towards something here. And I feel like your first concert experiences would have had a profound effect on you as well. Like, sealing the deal about performing. Do you have a little bit of dirt about that to share? Like, was it like a Linkin Park concert or something like that that sort of got you going? Exactly what I want to do.
Yeah, it was, I don't remember who, if it was someone's house party, but we were watching like back in the day of MTV, and we also had Much Music out here in Canada.
Yeah.
And I was at someone's house that weekend, just hanging out. We were having a good time. Like, you have to understand, I didn't like party or drink until like I was like literally my 19th birthday.
Wow.
I was very sober and focused in high school. And which is great, because I was able to cultivate everything I do now for a living. So I was at someone's house and they put on, you know, it was probably Much Music, and they were kind of just, I think they were just like replaying a Blink-182 concert.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw everything that was happening, and it was just kind of like, oh my God, that's what I want to do. Like, I know that's where I belong and that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And then it was also the Josie and the Pussycats movie, which was ridiculous and hilarious. That's a great movie. I have it on VHS and DVD, both completely outdated formats. I digress. And the soundtrack on cassette, mind you. But it you know, has the singer of Letters to Cleo, and it's a great soundtrack. And my sister took me to see that movie, and that was kind of that sealed the deal. It was like, oh my God, I see Blink-182 doing this. That is amazing. And then I go see Josie and the Pussycats, and I'm like, and it was weird because at the time I had the girl in the movie, the hair. I actually had that hair in high school, but I had it because of an anime character.
Right.
So I'm at school and everyone's like, oh, you have Josie hair. And I'm like, what? So then, you know, go to the theater. And I was like, oh my God, woman empowerment, being in a band, being a singer, being a songwriter, dealing with the bullshit of the industry, which never stops.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's me, you know, and that was it. Like, ever since that day, you could never change my mind.
Josie. That's so cool. I love it.
Gotta listen to that soundtrack tonight. No, so
yeah, good. I'm feeling the urge myself. That's so cool. That's really cool. Blink-182, great band. And I know you've professed a deep love of Evanescence as well.
Yes.
So when you sort of first heard, say, Bring Me to Life or any live footage, did that really just seal the deal and make you believe, yeah, I can really do this?
It was the weirdest time of my life because I was in a relationship, and my first relationship, and it was like I loved this guy since like grade six. Wow. And then we got to date in high school. And actually to this day, I still love him, but I'm like, it's so good we're not together.
Yeah.
You know, like two different people with two different, you know, I think I'm in love with a ghost at this point. I'm sure he's a very different person now. But the first year was like the honeymoon phase.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And, you know, he was really into the same bands and he was playing guitar. So like we loved Blink and he played guitar and we'd like write music together and play together. And it was just like the most in love you'll ever be, you know, like that was it for me. But then he changed and things got dark and he became this extremely, I don't want to say fully on abusive, but very like jealous, manipulative boyfriend. And that was like the controlling, it was heavy. So then, you know, I'm just kind of like, I was going through this dark phase in my life all of a sudden of like, and it was his family too. Like, I don't think when you're a teenager, these things happen and you don't really vocalize it, but they're just like, no, you can't be an artist. Like, you guys need to get your careers. And like, they were super Christian, like, you know, get married at like 18 and start having a family, like legit. They wanted this for, they're like, if you want to stay with our son, like you have to be all these things. It was really messed up. So I was like going through this really dark time of like, they didn't want me to be who I was. They didn't want me to pursue who I was. And it's like, my family's like, they were just kind of like, you know, you'll figure it out. Like I'm at the time I was mad at them for not standing up for me. But at the same time, it's like, you have to cultivate your own strength and stand up for yourself at the end of the day. So I was actually lying on the couch, like the weekend Bring Me to Life broke. I was lying on, I remember that what the couch looked like. It was so ugly. It was like this green with these race stripes down it. Mom, I don't know what you were thinking. But I'm lying there with like a head cold.
Right.
And Bring Me to Life comes on. And actually the beginning of the music video, a lot of people don't realize this, but it actually looks like the beginning of one of the Spice Girls videos. I think it's like Spice Up Your Life.
Oh, wow.
Like the whole city scene. So I was I was like, wait a minute. Is this the Spice Girls? Like, I was just like, I was really not doing well. Like, I think it was an ear throat infection. It was really bad. And then all of a sudden it's like this piano rings in and I'm like, this is not Spice Girls. And I hear her voice and I'm just listening to the lyrics and it all just unfolds so magically in front of me. And I was just like, I have never identified more with a song or a style of music than this right here. And that exact moment, my sister walks into the room and she'd missed the video. She was like, bless her, she had like orange hair and was wearing like a pink shirt, like very of the times, about to go to the mall, hang out with her girlfriends, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm going to the mall, do you want anything? And I remember, I think I spelled the band name wrong. I'm like, I think it's like Evanescence, but I I wrote it down. And I was, because it was just such a moment. I'm like, I can't remember this band name. I said, if you can get me, I remember Fallen. I was like, if you can get me the CD, that would be so cool. And I gave her $20. And then she, and then I just like passed out. I was so sick. And then she came back a few hours later and she gave it to me. And she's like, yeah, it was flying off the shelf. Like, people were grabbing it and buying it left, right, center. Like, this must be really good. And then that evening changed my life forever. Forever. That album, like, that first, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. Like, I listen to that album front to back and I'm like, this is exactly what I am going through on levels. It was just the most magical experience of my life with music.
That's so incredible. Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, we all have the musical soundtrack in life, you know, that just brings us back to emotional times. And that's so powerful to hear that from you. Because I've always been curious. So it's thank you again so much for sharing that.
Of course, I've never really told anyone the full story, but it was transforming. It was.
Oh, look, I was loving the couch. I don't know what your mom was thinking, man, but geez. Tell you.
Oh, no, it was like forest green with like this black racing stripe down it, but in the black racing stripe it had like little lines of like gold and red and orange. It was so weird. I'm like, why would you do that? I don't know. My mom, bless
eccentric.
Her,
she's
she tried.
I love it. So Evanescence has just blown your brains out. You've just connected on all the levels. And then you just find yourself going down this path of really discovering yourself musically and emotionally. Is this around the time you sort of start falling in love with, say, black metal and that as well?
Metal didn't, like, actual legit European metal didn't get into my radar until my mid-20s, like early mid-20s.
Yeah.
But at that time, with Evanescence doing their thing.
Yeah.
I came back to Kitty. I came back to my love of Kitty.
Oh, cool.
Because I listened to Kitty, but I was doing punk and I was like, I really like this, but like, I want to do punk. And you know, you just kind of fall off.
Fellow Canadian.
Came back to Kitty. Oh, they're like friends now too. They're wonderful people. So cool. And also Chevelle. I got huge into Chevelle, right, 3 Days Grace. And what was the other one at the time? I guess I want to say Lacuna Coil. I actually, was like my introduction, I guess, to say. Yeah. I found Caramelize and there was a sticker and it said, if you like Evanescence, you'll love Lacuna Coil. I was like, sold, you know, always looking, you know, young, living at home, no bills. Yeah. Of course, I'm going to go out on the weekend and buy a CD. The days of buying CDs. So now it's vinyl.
Right. I don't understand.
So kids today with their Spotify, they'll never know. I'm shaking my cane right now. So it was like, and then I was like, okay, like my band is kind of, you know, we did do a few heavier tunes, but it was still very punky and upbeat and it was interesting. I mean, it was kind of like speed punk alt. It was weird. So, you know, and it's good that we tried, but yeah, that was the, you know, beginning of it. I think if I didn't have that, I wouldn't have been open to my introduction in my early mid-20s, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I did hear Cradle of Filth in high school, and I thought the singer's voice was rubbish, but I loved the music. I thought
cool.
Midian was an incredible album, but I just couldn't listen to his voice.
Yeah.
So hearing it back, like, I loved Sarah's voice, and I was like, back in the day, I'm like, this is so something else. Like, it's dark, it's creepy, it's magnificent, it's eerie, it's like, I remember experiencing it and being like, I'm like, this is like Phantom of the Opera written by Satan.
Yeah.
Was like how I described Midian.
Yeah. I felt the same way.
Yeah. 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 It was like legit. But like, I just, you know, I had one listen and I'm like, can't do the guy's vocals.
At least you're honest.
Well, he knows.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's crazy. I mean, you know, without sort of going too crazy into that rabbit hole, but was that a trip for you? Like listening, you know, you talk about listening to Midian. That first moment playing those songs, was that a bit of a trip for you?
Yeah, the whole first two weeks on tour with them was just like, what the hell is happening? Because they, you know, again, I remember them when they were blowing up and becoming what they were. But then, like, when in my mid-early 20s, I want to say, I'll just say around 24.
Yeah.
That's when I was introduced to, Nightwish and Camelot, and then came, like, Catatonia and Epica. Wow. And I really got into them. And then I was dating a guy at the time that really got me into Dimmu, Cannibal, Belphegor, Satyricon. Like, he was really into that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a good mix of, like, black and death metal. He really loved death, which was cool to experience. But, right, where were we going with this? He actually, like, before when we broke up, it was what it was. But
yeah.
He gave me Nymphetamine and Midian. Right. And he's like, now that you listen to all this metal, I feel like you should try to revisit Cradle and appreciate it. And I was like, I'll give it a go. And then I actually, 6 months before the band contacted me, I listened to Midian again. And I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, like, that's cool.
This is iconic. You know, like, I understood, like, I am a Dimmu Borgir fan through and through.
Great band.
But I really do appreciate what Cradle brings to the table, especially with their classic albums like Midian, Dusk, and Cruelty. Mm-hmm. So I have a funny story about Cruelty later, but and then all of a sudden I'm on a world tour. My first show is in Mexico City, and funny enough, that first show loops back around to Motionless and White, because that was the first time I heard about Motionless and White. They asked Danny to do a song that day, and he almost didn't want to do it, and I said, no, you have to do it, well, you're dumb, because I knew they were on the come up. So it was like, oh, maybe I should pay attention to this band. They want to work with Danny Filth. But that first day, my first rehearsal was during sound check, and then it's like, all right, you're on stage. And I played some of those songs for the first time on stage.
Oh wow.
No, you know, we wonder why my adrenal glands are shot now, but
yeah.
I remember, you know, to this day, I think my favorite song is Her Ghost in the Fog, and playing it and singing it has always been my favorite.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, you know what I mean? I'm just like, oh, this is so weird. I'm singing Sarah's parts. I'm playing Martin's keys. Like, what the shit? You know, and it was weird the whole time. It was always like, never like, I mean, it was about like, yeah, you have to make the fans happy. But I was like, I really hope that my predecessors are proud of me.
Yeah.
And Sarah said, like, you know, she came out of the woodwork in between to see if, you know, who the new person was and what they were doing. And she's like, no, I thought you did good. And I'm like, thanks.
That's so cool.
I was just trying to live up to your legacy, girl. Cause, you know, I was a fan of her before I was a fan of Danny.
Right.
So I was like, I'm like, oh God, I hope she doesn't think I'm shit. It's scary when you have to sing someone else's parts. How do you do this justice? Like, you really have to think about those things, right?
Absolutely. And also the people that are watching you going, you better not fuck this up.
the really elitist fans. That's the thing, though. The Cradle fans are very opinionated. There's a small pocket of just absolute sweethearts who I still stay in touch with.
Yeah.
But like, there's a sea of them out there that, like, no matter what you do, they either love it or they hate it.
Yeah.
You just got to keep going, you know?
Absolutely. So you're seeing the world and everything, like, I mean, that's a trip for anyone. Like, you know, like you've gone from first bands and all that sort of stuff, and then next thing you know, you're playing in one of the biggest bands in the world, touring the world. Like, I mean, you must have moments where you sort of pinch yourself and go, what the hell is going on?
And especially like the days where I didn't sleep very much, because it was a lot of fly tours in the beginning. Yeah, it was like South America, Central South America, and then it was like Asia and Australia.
Yeah.
I actually didn't do my first bus tour until the year later with Behemoth in 2014.
Wow.
So it was like, it was intense. It was emotional. I had a lot of gratitude, and I just really couldn't grasp like what was going on the entire time. But it's just like, I'm like, I'm here to do a job. I'm here to do it well. I'm here to do it to my best of ability. You know, this is a huge opportunity, because I literally went from like
my band before Cradle, we were just doing small van tours across Eastern Canada. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm just like slumming it through like these van, this little mini van tour, to all of a sudden being on stage in front of thousands of people.
Yeah, that's a trip, man.
It was insane. It was overwhelming, but it was just kind of like, no, like I asked for this. I told the universe this is what I wanted, and I manifested it, and now here I am, and I have to own it.
Yeah. And yeah, absolutely. And seeing the world as well, like, I mean, was it, you know, getting a chance to soak up some of the culture as well, like, was that very appealing for you as well?
I loved it. I got to see how other people lived and what they valued and the food and the culture and what was important to them. And I love how universal metal is.
Yeah.
I really do. Like, wherever you go, if people are into metal, you have a family. Yeah. And that's, it's with the fans, it's with the other musicians, it's with the people who work your shows, like crew, staff, and promoters. Mm-hmm. And you're a big family. We all look out for one another. And I think that's beautiful. But yeah, I think the places that have had a really lasting effect on me have been Taiwan and Japan.
That's, yeah, love Japan.
Yeah, because it's just, I don't know, there's something, maybe a past life thing. I don't know.
No, there's a certain magic and mystique to a place like Japan, especially, that's, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
It's you know, I think I can't remember if I've been there two or three times, but every time was just like, whoa, you know?
Yeah. Your first time it's pretty overwhelming. It's like that first walk into LA or somewhere, your brain just blows out the other side of your head.
Or like New York or one of those cities. Yeah. It's like, oh, shit.
Yeah. You just go, what the hell? I'm not in Kansas anymore.
Yeah.
So you were saying you had a funny cruelty story to tell as well. I'm like, you put it out there. I have to hear this story.
It's an incredible album to listen to.
Right.
But when you have to learn to play it, it, like, I officially label myself a prog musician because of being able to play that album front to back on keys and singing. And especially because they didn't really accommodate, which is good, they didn't accommodate like it for a keyboardist who sang Sarah's parts.
Yeah.
So it was just a wild ride. Like, I had to open new neural pathways to like be able to to sing and play these songs. And it just like forever ruined me. And I'm just like, I don't see music the same way. I don't play music the same way. And when it comes to writing classical music, like I do now with Antiqua, it's like, I don't know what they were thinking, but they broke a lot of rules of what metal could do and what music could be. And I have a lot of respect for that, but it just kind of like, it changed me as a person. Like that was the first time I had to learn a whole album and perform it front to back. And I think I did it for more than 80 dates, I believe. And yeah, you don't forget it. Like, I'll go to my grave knowing that album front to back. You know what I mean? It changes you.
Yeah, I bet. That's so cool, man. So, what an incredible journey you've had. And I'm also curious, like, you sing and play instruments. Like, I mean, you're very accomplished and talented, and I'd love to know, like, that's cool. But besides the bass, which rules, I mean, how many instruments do you play yourself?
I play the bass very poorly now. It's just kind of like a hobby instrument.
Yeah.
And that's why when the Cancer Bats asked me in the fall to come play bass for one song, because they're like, well, our buddy Giordo has to play the mandolin and the banjo. Can you play the bass? And I'm like, for you, yes. For anyone else, absolutely not. Mm. But like, it was kind of like going back to an instrument I hadn't played in like 20 years. It was painful, very painful. But yeah, I mainly just focus on like singing first and foremost, but mainly just piano and harp. Like, that's it. I've been keeping it a secret for a long time, but I did try to pick up another instrument from the Middle East, but due to my tiny fingers, I think it's completely kiboshed. I think I'm just going to sell the instrument because yeah, I'm really sad about it. I mean, I could maybe still make it work, but sometimes you're just too tiny of a person to make some instruments work. Like, you know, like playing the double bass would probably crush me. So
yeah.
You know how it is.
Yeah,
so, totally, man. Yeah, but I mean, I played cello for a bit, but not well. And I'm sure, you know, you throw me on a church organ, I can figure it out. But that's about it, really.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah,
that's really cool, man. I mean, you know, I don't know, being able to play more than one instrument, I think, is a huge achievement in anyone's book. So, yeah, I think
that's cheers. Great.
Yeah, man. Yeah, so I won't hold you up too much longer, but...
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah, cool. So you also... successfully put out your own solo work as well, which awesome body of work. How was that Thank process you. For you making that album?
It was the most exciting and painful experience of my life. And I say that because I got to work with, like, remember how we talked about my experience of Bring Me to Life?
Well, yes.
The drummer there was Rocky. And yeah. then all of a sudden, flash forward, I'm working on my first solo album with Rocky, who's doing all the drums and guitar and bass, and then helping me through orchestration. And like, I learned so much working with him. He's an incredibly brilliant songwriter. So it was exciting because it's like, I'm working with one of my fucking idols.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was painful because Cradle is one of those bands that if a tour pops up out of nowhere, they're going to take it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you think you have this amount of time off and then all of a sudden you're on tour somewhere and you're like, oh, hell, you know, you're like, it's like, OK, you got a month, like pack up and go. And I'm like, thanks, guys. Like,
yeah.
No, like, it's not like, hey, are you available? It's like, oh, you're going on tour now. I'm like, wow, so considerate. So it made it really painful to stop and start and stop and start the process. And it took like 2 years between touring with Cradle Filth to complete that album. But Rocky was great because he was always on standby. Like I'm getting emotional talking about this. Like he would always make time for me. And he had his film scores and his video game soundtracks to keep him busy in between. But it was good because I feel like we'd start something, I'd at least try to complete something to a certain point. Like I wouldn't leave anything half done in the demo phases. And then we'd let it simmer. And then we'd come back to it. Like we had a lot of time to really think about what we wanted to do with these songs and where we wanted to go and all the little extras that we wanted in there. So I think having that stop and start, as like painful as it was for me, it was like almost like a grieving, like a loss of like, oh, but I really want to finish the song right now, but I have to go on tour, you know?
Yeah.
Not that I wasn't ungrateful. I was always grateful, but it was good that we had that stop and start breathing space, because there were some songs where like, if we didn't, I think we would have rushed through them and they wouldn't have become what they did.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. 100%, man. 100%. And it's a huge achievement to be able to do something like that. And especially with someone that you look up to with high praise like that, that's such an achievement. Is that like, now you've had that first taste, I mean, is that like, you're just like, yeah, man, I've got this, man. I'm just going to keep doing this. Is that where your mind's at with music?
With like writing? Yeah. Especially during this pandemic, I've really taken the production seat, like as a producer. There's a lot to learn. I am not a very good engineer. I can't mix. I can't comp. I can't master. But I can definitely oversee a song coming to completion and the direction for it. And I absolutely love producing music.
That's so cool.
My joy, like when you put it hand in hand with songwriting, it's brilliant.
Yeah, and I love that. And getting to, you know, you get to work with, you've worked with so many great musicians, and you mentioned Antiqua as well. But your heart lays purely and solely with your solo work now. So I think you're on the right track, man.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm trying. Yeah, I think I am. I love it.
Yeah. No, I love it. And so you talk about your emotional journeys and stuff like that. I guess let's take a little dive into a bit of mental health, something that you're very passionate about. And one thing I noticed is you have such a wonderful support base behind you, your Patreon fans, your fans in general. You've just got this, I don't know, man, like people have fan bases. And I kind of look at things like, you know, the some of it's quite superficial, but yours is genuine. There's like a real passion, like a family there.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about that and how it impacts you as a person?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you put out is what you get back.
Yeah.
And my fans are everything to me. And all those years going around the world and releasing what music I could of my own, I really took my time to sit and be with my fans and listen to them. And it's important that they know that they're seen, they're heard, and they're understood. Yeah. You know, to a point. Sometimes I can't understand what people are texting me, but I just go with it. Yeah. You know, it is what it is, power of the internet. But yeah, like, it's like, you know, do you see me? Do you hear me? Do I matter? And I think that's really important, especially when they take their time to listen to my music, to come talk with me. I want to know about them. I think getting to know people, like, the greatest knowledge and experience that you can have in life is understanding and knowing other people. Because you learn so much about it, it expands your view on life and how to treat others, but also how to write music. So because of those relationships I've developed with my fans, I mean, they've stuck around and they've sustained me, and they know how much I love and appreciate them.
That's beautiful, you know? Man. That's really beautiful. And it's, you know, obviously with the last 2 years and everything, has that support mechanism helped you get through, you know, your times, light and dark?
Yeah, everything. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, the pandemic hit and I put out that Harp album, and they showed up so hard.
Yeah.
They showed up so hard. They really were excited, and they said, oh, it was great because I'm so stressed out because of the pandemic. They're like, it's nice to have chill out music. And I'm like, oh, okay, I did something right. And then I was scared to launch a Patreon, and a friend of mine who was assisting me for a bit, she's like, no, you're doing it.
Yeah.
And it was painful. I was like, oh man, this is an adjustment and this is a lot of work. But like, the people that have shown up and what they've given, the experiences we've created together on Patreon were worth it.
That's so and cool.
They're making the new music happen, and I couldn't be more grateful.
Yeah. That's beautiful, man. That's really beautiful.
Yeah.
And, and one thing I'd like to ask you about also quickly is you know, being budding vegans. yeah, like, I mean, when you were on the road early on in that, was that in your were you vegan at that time as well? Like, was that, I guess the question I want to ask is, touring the world and being a vegan, was that is that a hard thing to balance?
It was in the beginning, because it was like, I was vegetarian for years before I went vegan.
Right.
And then, right, it was kind of like it was at the end of 2012, I'm like, no, I'm going to go vegan. And then Cradle happened, and it was the beginning of 2013. And I'm like, oh no, world tour.
Yeah.
And especially like starting out in South America, Central America, Asia, you know, it was like, they're like, you're what? You want what? Like, I didn't, like, I had my buddy Elisa from March End of Me, like, she was really, you know, to this day, we still chat and when we can, she's so busy. And she'd send me resources and stuff, like the vegan, what is it? The vegan passport and just like stuff. So when I do another tour, like, I'd be safe. But it was hard, like, you know, getting people to understand, especially in Central South America, because they eat a lot of meat.
Yeah.
But when I got to Asia, it was pretty, it got easier. And then I got to Australia and they're just like, yeah, vegan shop on every street. And I'm like, love you guys. You know, it was so much easier, but it was a struggle. And then I realized, you know, like, I had to be the person to educate them. Like, you know, I can't just show up at a restaurant and expect them to cater to me. But it was, then, you know, from the time I started touring until about, I'd say 2018, that's when like the UK and Russia, really started to understand what veganism was. Yeah. Like, I remember I think it was the first time I went to Russia, they're like, oh, we finally got hummus here. We've never had hummus. And I'm like,
this is hilarious. You know, like, are you friggin' kidding me? Because it was just never really on their menu. And it came like in a weird little glass jar, like what salsa comes in.
Yeah.
It was the strangest thing. You know what I mean? But it was, yeah, it's been a trip. And now the world seems to understand it a lot more. So yeah. Thank God for that.
Yeah, it's a good thing, right? And was it a hard transition for you to go from vegetarian to vegan? Like what inspired you to go there?
It was a little bit of a Lisa and a little bit of the time. Like I gotta, you know, like I could tell my body was very allergic to dairy.
Yeah.
Like I'd break out in rashes and my hormones would be all over the place and I'd feel like foggy and gross.
Mm.
So I was like, well, if I'm going to cut out cheese, I might as well cut out eggs
while
I'm at it. And then I noticed like I felt better, but it was also for the animals, like learning about what was going on. I was like, I can't support this. Like I can't. Knowing that and then eating this makes me feel horrible. Like I can't do that. Yeah. So,
yeah. I think that's brilliant. Yeah. I felt the same. I went down that path as well. So yeah, it definitely is a better way of living. That's for sure.
Yeah. Clean conscience. You know what I mean?
I dig it, man. Yeah, absolutely. So before we wrap up, any mystical awesomeness that you're currently working towards right now that you want to chat about real quick or?
Oh, I just gave you the biggest yawn because the last 2 days I had a song out with Motionless and White. And that's just been a wild ride and a trip.
Yeah.
What I have to say, like, they have my top tier industry respect as a band because they put out really good music. And they put on an incredible live show and they've always inspired me and motivated me to just be better and do better on all levels. But they're also as people, just really good people, like really, like they're really honest, straightforward, kind, supportive people. And you couldn't ask for more when it comes to collaborators. So yeah, Chris is a gem. I really appreciate him and what the band have done.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, he's really good people. And he is where he is because of who he is and how hard he works. Right now I'm in the middle of doing the Coldbound album. So they're a like symphonic prog band from mainly Scandinavia.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in the middle of that and I am also pooped because of that, but it's worth it. It's coming together. You know, perpetually writing and finishing up the Antiqua album. I have no idea when that's coming out.
It'll happen when it happens, buddy.
that's kind of where I am with Antiqua at the moment. We'll figure it out when we figure it out. You know, I've got a new song out this week called New World. It's with Fabian from Elvady and I got Jen from Evanescence on guitar, which is cool. Always good to work with Evanescence members. And what else is there? I know there's more. Oh, I'm doing my next heavy track with Sarah Jezebel Deva on Patreon right now.
Fantastic.
So yes, we're just in the throes of figuring it out. And it's like, we're like, what do you, I don't, you know, the vultures at the end of Jungle Book. It's like, I don't know. What do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? Like that's literally, we're trying to figure that. Once we get the vocals written, the rest will be a breeze, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So, lastly, I gotta ask, favorite Disney?
Oh, it's always the Lion King. That's always the first one that comes to my mind. But I mean,
Hakuna Matata.
I love the Lion King so much. I didn't go see the real one. I couldn't bring myself to go see the live action one. I'm like, no, absolutely not. You cannot mess with a classic. It's forever the Lion King. I mean, Beauty and the Beast is a hard number two.
Yeah.
For reasons, but that's about it.
That's so cool. Oh, that's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, Lindsay, thank you so much for your time. I know how busy you are and that, and more importantly, you have an amazing vegan pizza to get into.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hell yeah. I can only imagine. Yeah, it's going to be awesome, dude. I'm sure that the cat will snuggle up with you.
He can't wait. He feels so neglected right now. Bless him.
I love all your pictures of your cat. It's
He knows how pretty he is.
Yeah.
He knows.
Is he vain by any chance?
Oh yeah, he's just like, when he wants something, he puts on those Pikachu eyes and he's like, hey, and I'm like, you're the worst.
Yeah. That's so cool. I love it. Well, we'll have links to everything in the description box and everything, but
I'm stoked.
Lindsay, thank you so much for sharing your happy days. You're an absolute gem of a human being and a dear friend. And
so are you.
Oh, thanks. And yeah, it's an absolute thrill to have you part of this, and I hope we can do this again down the track.
Yeah, I hope so too. Thanks so much for having me. This is fun. It was honestly one of the best interviews. Top three for life,
right on.
I think. Yay. Right here. This is amazing. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Okay, well, we'll talk soon, and you have yourself a wonderful eating experience.
Oh, thank you. Have a good day.
Yeah, right, we'll thank see you. Ya. See ya. Bye.
Bye.
And that was my amazing chat with Lindsay Schoolcraft. Thank you so much to Lindsay for taking the time to chat to me about her happy days and everything else that she's up to. That was a lot of fun, man. It was a very engaging and inspiring chat. And it was wonderful just to chat to her, not just about some of the obvious things that she talks about in media, but just more like just the fun stuff, like the, you know, those early bands, her first crush, her first band that she was in, you know, discovering Evanescence, all those sorts of things. I think it's all relevant. And even talking about the vegan culture, I thought was really cool and insightful. And we'll possibly follow up on that with a few conversations with people, not just of the vegan culture, but maybe some other ones, because, yeah, it's a real thing. It's a part of our world. So, I think there's some genuinely interesting discussions to be had with people from different walks of life about that. So it was nice to have a chat with Lindsay about her perspective, and hopefully you all got something really cool from that. As I said at the beginning of the episode, if you enjoyed this episode and want to stay in tune with everything else awesome that's coming up, hit that subscribe button on whatever streaming platform you listen to podcasts on. There are over 30 episodes of wonderful chats with some amazing people on this podcast. So feel free to check it out. There's some really cool ones there. And yeah, man, go that one step further and tell your friends about it. Leave a review, hit the rating button. It all helps. And I appreciate your support. And I genuinely appreciate you taking the time to listening to this episode. Again, thanks for tuning into Happy Days. My name's Jesse. You've been amazing. And check out my wonderful creative journey or my comic books and novels, etc. on the Freak Productions Network. Go to www.freekproductions.com and pick up and support a good cause. Thanks so much. And look forward to having you here with me on the next episode. Thanks again to Lindsay. Keep it awesome. Keep it real, everyone. And have an awesome, happy week. Cheers.